Well, good early morning to everyone. It's not quite four. It's the famous hour. There is an advantage to not being able to sleep. You know, you can do the commentaries. So we were ending with Rays and Initiations webinar commentaries number 70, and a couple of things that were pointed out that as the ability to focus in the soul increases, the disciple is achieving with his first initiation a position from which he is constantly fighting against his lower nature, as it says here, and the requirements of the soul as he somewhat ignorantly interprets them. Or let's put it like this way, and the requirements of the soul are in constant session against his animal nature and increasingly in relation to the emotional nature. So we learn that the animal nature is not completely conquered at the first degree, but must be to a certain extent conquered, or that degree cannot be taken. That is the degree in which the seventh ray and the sacral center are prominent, and some elevation to the throat center for a higher form of creativity is required. Okay, so there's the secondary relation, which increases the fight, you know, on the way to the second degree, though it may take a long time. He discovers that his emotional nature, his lower psychic faculties, his astral development, and the potency of glamour are now all arrayed against him. It's not an easy process, this working one's way out of the depths of matter into which we, the monad in extension, have gone forth. But okay, this is the task of redemption, of previously unfinished business in the previous solar system and on the moon chain. There were difficulties there in both of those, I think, connected with the third ray. So you kind of wonder, since there were third ray problems in the previous solar system and on the moon chain, what type of problems along the third aspect of divinity may have been present in the cosmic logos and on? I mean, where did the difficulty really begin? We're told that cosmic evil is the result of a maladjustment between one of the stars in the Great Bear, one of the leading stars, and one of the stars in the Pleiades. And my suspicion is that it is a third ray star that's out of alignment in both cases. So this elevates the problem to still a higher logos. The Great Bear represents the head center of the one about whom naught may be said, and the seven Pleiades, major ones, may well represent the jewel in the lotus in the within that thousand-petaled lotus. Well, actually, let me be a little more specific about the Great Bear. It doesn't exactly represent the head center per se. It represents the seven centers within the head, just the way Vulcan does. It is the Pleiades which represent, as a whole, the thousand-petaled lotus. Those are symbolic numbers, I suppose, of the one about whom naught may be said, which is our local supercosmic logos, whom we call, because we can't do anything else, the one about whom naught may be said. But it seems like quite a bit is said about that one, although all, I suppose, in fairly symbolic terms, because we don't really know anything. And when you think of how close that being is to us relatively compared to other collections of stars within the galaxy and other galaxies. It's really a local matter, but to people such as us with our present development, it seems utterly vast. So there's plenty to do in this cosmos, and it will keep us going forever, and this is the paradox. It will keep us going forever and already has. So we really have to change our view of what time is and how we relate to time and to this factor we call eternity or eternal duration. Okay, well, that's a little philosophical digression here early in the morning. Maybe that's what happens if things are too early in the morning. But let's move on here to number 71. So we have this first degree initiate. He is strongly influenced by the seventh ray, as we have been seeing the various aspects of seventh ray influence are being tabulated here, starting from page 573 and the beginning of program number 7. So he's summing up what he said before, and the seventh ray is powerful on the physical plane at the first initiation. The Christ consciousness is manifesting because it can bring the high and the low together. The new evolutionary processes are set in motion, right human relations are facilitated. The poles are brought into new adjustment. Human creativity is increasing. A new world order is emerging. All this connected with the seventh ray and with the first initiation, not only of individuals, but of humanity. And then he goes through what it will do for the individual initiate, not just for the greater whole of humanity, of course, which is more important. The relation between the soul and mind, the ordering of the emotional nature, elementary white magic is understood, and the new form of creativity is coming out. The mind and brain are related on the seventh ray. Interesting about the rays of those who are taking the first initiation, both the mind and brain, maybe they always are on the seventh ray. He seems to suggest that that's the ray configuration when the first initiation is taken. Right human relations are established. All of this is emerging at the present time. Now we seem, we're in the question of the second initiation now and the fanaticism of it. And everything is arrayed against him because the sixth ray strengthens his astral body. So a new complication is added to the still unconquered instinctual nature, which is warring against him, and that is the problem of the orientation of desire, right? Desire. Will it be desire for what is low, coming under Mars, or desire for what is higher, coming under Neptune? Turn to Esoteric Astrology, page 517, and you'll see the important chart there about the planets and the chakras for the ordinary human being and for the disciple. So, on we go. So the reorientation with which our disciple, now heading for the second degree, or at least somewhere, positioned somewhere between the first and second, the reorientation with which he is now faced has to be brought about primarily on the astral plane, because that has been, for untold eons, the level of his major polarization and the sphere of activity and the state of consciousness which has dominated him. We do live in an astral Buddhic solar system, and our particular planetary logos, we are told, has not yet really mastered his astral body, but has lots of difficulties on the cosmic astral plane. I'm sure we can't conceive what that really means, but dealing with the fourth subplane of the cosmic astral plane. So there's a real battle going on in the astral body of our planetary logos, and we are the heirs to the problem which confronts him. It influences us as well. So, you know, for long ages, the emotional phase is the one that is dominant. Early Atlantean times occurred about 12 million years ago, and only 1 million years ago did the true Aryan root race begin, regardless of its preparation during Atlantean times. And for so many today, still the Atlantean emotional consciousness prevails. So we can see how many people are emotionally oriented and how difficult it is in this solar system and on this planet to master the unified astral body. You know, DK sometimes talks about that. And in this manner, going to this chart we so often use, you notice that the mental plane is divided by a dotted line. The physical plane is divided by a dotted line, but the emotional plane, the astral plane, is not divided by a dotted line. It is a unified and thus more powerful vehicle. We don't have this strong demarcation between higher emotions and lower emotions. Of course, the demarcation exists. There are great differences, but we don't have such a clear-cut distinction as between higher mind and lower mind and the etheric range of experience and the dense physical range. Okay. Right. The physical body is not a principle. Okay. He repeats that so often, but I suppose it's important because people continually give superabundant attention to the physical body as if it were the most real thing in their lives, and he's trying to dissuade us from that false perception. His etheric body has, since Atlantean days, been the agent of his astral energy. See, the etheric body will carry whatever energy is prominent in the energy system, and for the human being in the Atlantean period, the astral energy is prominent. For the mind, nature is not yet developed and cannot therefore adequately take control. So we can also say that the etheric body will be for many the conduit of primarily mental energy. I think it is for disciples and many who are studying the DK books, you know, their mental focus is strong. And somewhere DK tells us that the mind itself activates our etheric body and vitality. And so I'm sure we've all had the experience of being stimulated by certain kinds of thoughts and even feeling that energizing occurring physically. But anyway, you know, we are now between the first and second initiation. That's what we're discussing. And there is a reorientation of desire. He discovers that he lives in a chaos of emotional reactions and of conditioning clamors which condition his behavior, which orient him towards what he considers to be the desirable and generally will lead him astray. I mean, DK talked about the German nation in the Second World War with its Pisces personality and how easily impressed it was, how impressionable the people were, and how glamour had taken over, and they were led badly astray. Maybe now the soul under Aries is coming in more strongly, and the fourth ray with its power of perception. He slowly begins to realize that in order to take the second initiation, he must demonstrate emotional control. Well, you know, this is one of those great truisms in occultism. And as we can tell, when we look at the majority of people and even the many disciples, that the question of emotional control is one which they have to which they have to apply themselves. He realizes also that he must have some knowledge of those spiritual energies which will dissipate glamour, you know, the what can we call it, the fusion into one light of three lights, of matter, of mind, and of the soul. He has to have this, plus an understanding of the technique whereby illumination from the mind as the transmitting agent of the light of the soul can dispel these glamours and thus clarify the atmosphere in a technical sense. It's like bad weather, you know, it prevents you from seeing the sun, in this case, the sun of truth and reality. I'll just put it in. Bad weather hides the sun of truth and reality. So, you know, people are wandering upon the major plane of illusion at this time. It's called illusion, even though it's astral. And they do not see clearly and desire that which is not of real spiritual value. And that's where disciples and aspirants of our nature come in, helping to rightly orient people and helping to clarify their understanding of these inner things. Of course, we still have plenty to understand about it ourselves, as the a reading of Glamour, a World Problem will reveal. It's rather humbling what all has to be done, and it does take time and application. Okay, emotional control. So I will make that increasing the font. It will kind of stand out, you know, as important. Right. I might emphasize that as yet, no initiate demonstrates complete control during the intermediate period between any initiation and the next initiation. The intermediate period, during which time, interestingly, the formulas for initiation are applied, the intermediate period is regarded as a cycle of perfecting, during which the during which one or other of the six formulas is applied. So a cycle of perfecting. So, you know, we had to have a requisite amount of control of our physical instincts at the first degree, but the perfecting continues as we go on, and we're a requisite degree of emotional control has to be prepared, but maybe not complete emotional control. And even following the second degree, some of that control is being worked upon, even as the focus turns very mental. And as a spiritual intelligence and an illumined mind are being prepared. But even after the third degree, spiritual intelligence increases, excuse me, and the illumined mind, even as the intuition is being cultivated. So there's always going to be an overlap in this sense of how we progress. So during the intermediate period between any incarnation and the next higher incarnation, we do not demonstrate complete control. And we enter, you know, we're in always virtually a cycle of perfecting, and maybe it should be understood by each of us what it is that we are in process of perfecting. So I will just kind of emphasize this with the usual method of highlighting and so forth. That which is being left behind and subordinated to the higher by energies which are to be released into consciousness of the initiate at the initiation for which he is being prepared. So the greater energies begin to, that's beginning, begin, burning ground, that's burning ground, begin to dominate the energies being left behind. You know, just as in the development of the human race, we had the, purely instinctual man. But eventually he began to leave that phase behind and become more the emotional creature. And the emotional creature begins to leave that stage behind without necessarily losing the value of what was established and becomes the mental creature. Okay, I'm hearing little pops here in the system, and I'm hoping that we're okay and that you're hearing me. Even if my reference computer is not hearing me. Okay, so that which is being left behind and subordinated to the higher realization, so the emotional realization is higher than the instinctual, the mental higher than the emotional, the intuitive higher than the mental, and the factor of will, or being acquiescent to the will of deity, whatever represents deity, is higher than even the intuitional. So we progress with ever higher types of energies which subordinate the energies we are leaving behind. So these energies are released into the consciousness at the initiation for which he's being prepared, but even then there's not necessarily perfection. We're working on these new energies before we achieve the initiation. At the initiation, we achieve a requisite amount or intensity of the desired energies, and after, there is still perfecting going on, even as we're working to develop a requisite amount of the next type of energy which is needed at the next initiation. So this interim period is always one of great difficulty. Well, that's our life, isn't it? Because we're mostly in the interim period as disciples. The energies being registered, made active, and finally used are steadily increasing in number and potency at each initiation. So in our armamentarium, you know, in our spiritual weaponry, we always have more and more of these energies available to us to accomplish what must be accomplished in the divine plan. These impacts upon the rays of the soul and the personality rays of the initiate. Now notice, this is interesting. The rays of the soul. Is this a little hint? He could have just said the ray of the soul, but there is a sub-ray to the soul, which is not just the personality ray. So I want to call that to our attention. Sometimes a little hint can be given in such a way that a plural may open the door to greater understanding. In this case, the door to understanding that the soul has a major ray and a sub-ray, which is still upon the plane of soul and is not within the personality. So energies are being newly registered and activated and used, and they're increasing in potency as we approach the next initiation. These impacts upon the rays of the soul and the personality rays of the initiate and on the subsidiary vehicles through which he works, so which is, you know, he distinguishes the ray of the personality and even the rays, personality rays of the initiate. Notice that here we have the hint of the sub-ray of the personality. There is a disciple who had a second-ray soul and a sixth-ray personality, and that sixth-ray personality was either generated by or related to the fact that each one of his personality vehicles itself had a sixth sub-ray. Well, we all have all the rays, but as in building the Antikorana, two of them are singled out for greater importance, the ray of the soul and the temporary ray of the personality. Excuse me. Okay. So these impact upon the rays of the soul and the personality rays. And then he distinguishes between these rays and the rays of the subsidiary vehicles. So right there in that little sentence, if we're alert to meaning, we discover that we're being told something. Okay, the personality rays of the initiate and on the subsidiary vehicles through which he works in the three worlds and upon their individual conditioning rays. Could be plural. Again, it is plural. It is plural in the case of each vehicle. Produce at first tremendous difficulties. So let's just say that, and we don't know where these difficulties come from our average type of understanding. So impacts of higher energies cause difficulties. Okay, and these the initiate must master and the problems he must solve, you know. So it's already a big deal to understand. We must understand whence our energy difficulties come. DFC, difference, DFF. Well, I'll work on that a little later. Okay, so as these problems are solved by the initiate who considers, along with Master Maurya, that obstacles are possibilities when we finally learn, he thereby becomes a master, and the process as it goes forward from initiation to initiation becomes, after the third initiation, the transfiguration, less hard and distressing. Well, there are these challenges, of course, and it's hard to think about the fourth initiation as not being hard and distressing. But maybe the distress is, let's say, not so frictional in the lower sense, and not so much involved with the personality vehicles. The reason for this is that he is increasingly master of his own individual situation. The planet Uranus is involved with this mastery. We're talking about the microcosm of Leo, and Uranus rules for the initiate, is the hierarchical, hierarchical ruler of Leo. So I wonder if it's HL. It is. He is, however, occultly involved with the difficulties and problems of the group and of that totality of groups which we call humanity. So his sphere of influence is increasing, and the problems become more complex, but less personal. So, you know, if we're still struggling within our personality for some minor masteries of minor frictions, we know we have not reached that point where we are entering into the solar expansive initiations, which begin at the third degree. The initiatory process between the first and second initiations is, for many, the worst time of distress, difficulty, realization of problems, and the constant effort to clear himself, you know, this is a psychological term, right, as it is occultly called, to which the disciple is at any time subjected. So, you know, let's pay attention to that. We meet with so many people who are working between the first and second degree, and that is precisely what the case was for Master DK's some 50 disciples to whom he gave real clear attention. So they were going through, well, all of this difficulty. So I'm just going to accentuate the words worst time, and one knows one can live through it inevitably and will. The stress, these friction within the personality, let's call it like that. We'll call it this way, distressing frictions within the personality. Although the soul is involved causing these frictions due to the type of energy which is applied, so different from the personality energy. The phrase stating that the objective of the initiate is to clear himself, this is, a deglamorization, isn't it? Deglamorization is perhaps the most arresting and illuminating of all possible definitions of the task to be undertaken. So, this is the need to still oneself, find one's center, let the emotional turmoil die down, and to see clearly what is happening, and then to apply the sort of fifth ray techniques of the blending of the triple light for the eradication of the glamours which are presently overpowering or overcoming the consciousness. So he says, this is the term to study. Study this term. It is very indicative of the process to be undertaken. The storm aroused by his emotional nature, the dark clouds, the mists, the analogies to weather are so clear, in which he constantly walks and which he has created throughout the entire cycle of incarnated living, have all to be cleared away in order that the initiate can say that for him, the astral plane no longer exists, at least in terms of the kind of desire forms that he has created in the past, and that all that remains of that ancient and potent aspect of his being is aspiration. So obviously the matter, the atoms are still there, but not the misleading forms. The misleading and deluding forms are gone. A sensitive response to all forms of divine life, and a form through which the lowest aspect of divine love, goodwill, can flow without impediment. So it's not nothing, let's just understand that. When it is said that there is no longer an astral body, it does not mean that the previously astral field is void of anything. There is still matter and various energies flowing through those atoms of matter. Okay, so I guess we've all done this, created this emotional condition, and humanity is still, so many of the human beings involved in this stormy, unstable situation. All this has to be cleared away. And when you study the glamour formulas, we realize that that beam of triple light, as one light, the searchlight, so to speak, is the major instrument for this clearing. So the beam of triple light as one light is the instrument for the clearing. And of course, the mantras which he has given us, these words of power, and so forth. So the astral plane as it used to exist no longer exists. All of the misleading desire forms and images, they are gone. The misleading desire forms and images are gone, and something remains, and it is this upward tending of energy we call aspiration, a kind of a sensitivity, and goodwill. So what is flowing through the astral body is aspiration, sensitivity, and goodwill as love in action. So let me put that down, that what now flows through the astral body is sensitivity, or what now is present in the astral body, the former astral body, is sensitivity. Let's see, and aspiration, and good will as the representative of love. And remember also that goodwill, as we have recently learned, is the representative of the will to good, but maybe that appears more in the mind. From the larger point of view, it is this struggle to clear the world atmosphere which will confront humanity after the first initiation so close at hand today, at least the way the masters count time. So this, this clearing will be undertaken in the immediate centuries ahead. We don't know exactly when that first initiation will be registered as completed, in the same way that we don't know when the Christ will return reappear into visibility. But when that happens, it will signify a great achievement, and humanity can move on to preparation for its second initiation, which involves clearing the astral plane. So each one of us has to do that for ourselves and not be swept away by the prevailing glamours which we have generated over so many cycles, and by the, in general, the prevailing glamours of humanity. You will see, therefore, why the Christ must come at this time, for he is the one who presides at the first and second initiation, and, let's just say that he must come because humanity is ready for these initiations, and the hierarchy does respond to human readiness. And it is his coming which will indicate that humanity has taken the first initiation. Okay, so this is what I've been repeating. When I first read it, I found it to be a very arresting statement, that these two things coincide, the first initiation of humanity and the coming of the, or the reappearance of the Christ. So it is his coming which will indicate that humanity has taken the first initiation, which will confirm and consolidate the work done, and which will inaugurate the world cycle and period in which the task of reorganizing the emotional and psychic life of humanity will take place. Well, this business of reorganizing, let's attribute it to its cause, Uranus, and the seventh ray. So I'm going to make an abbreviation here. Oh, that abbreviation exists. Okay, good. So the work upon the emotional nature really begins in earnest after the first degree. The work upon the emotional nature begins in earnest after the first degree. This period will release the energy of goodwill, so maybe the greatest flood of goodwill we are to expect after humanity has taken the first initiation and after the Christ has reappeared. It will release the energy of goodwill, which we so sorely need today, but I guess we have to learn that we need it, and thus automatically bring about right human relations. So good will is definitely related to the appearance in humanity of right human relations. And the real intensity of this process occurs after the first initiation of humanity is taken and the Christ has reappeared. Okay. Excuse me. As regards humanity as a whole, and, you know, polarized as it is in the emotional nature, so politicians know this well, you know. They're not just speaking to the mental, rational faculty when they campaign for office, and a demagogue is precisely the one who can sway the emotions of people and avoid appealing to their mind and to reason. So as regards humanity as a whole, polarized as it is in the emotional nature, and we have to remember that the billions are thus polarized, the effect of this sixth ray is potent in the extreme. So we've had the sixth ray Piscean cycle, and we're in a larger cycle of which 21,000 years for sixth ray expression still remains. Well, you know, those cycles are interesting, and we're missing certain really important keys. We have the hints. Its energy has been playing upon men ever since it came into incarnation. Well, okay, you know, this would have been at the time when the Age of Pisces began, in at least in the local racial cycle. This was when the precessional Age of Pisces began. Okay, precessional, I think. That's something which should be a word we have to dictionary. And the last 150 years have seen the potency become extremely effective. So what do we do? This is being written in the 40s, so 150 years. So we're approximately going back to the 1790s for the time here indicated. Now, you know, let's look at this, let's look at that indication. Stephen Pugh is a very good rheologist, and he's done some work on the cycles of ray cycles that are not given to us, but this idea of the number 15, which totals to 6, and then 150, which totals to 6, these are the durations which he has connected to the sixth ray, 1550, 1500, 15,000, all that. And I think he's correct. And I think in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1, D.K. deals with periods of 150 years, approximately, which relate to the different subcycles of the sixth ray. So it's not necessarily accidental here that we see the phrase 150 years. Extremely effective, you know, going into the 1940s, you kind of wonder, I guess I could do more research on it, but, you know, is this the six of the six or is this the seventh ray cycle of the subcycle of the sixth ray, which would be like effective and grounded and manifested? So let's see what he says. Two factors have enhanced this effort. The sixth ray effect, rather. The sixth ray of idealism or of devotion is the ray which normally governs the astral plane, controlling its phenomena and coloring its glamour. Now, you know, if we have a double six, there would be a very strong accentuation. But there's some things he said about activities in the 1870s or in that latter part of the 19th century, which suggests that we were in the seventh ray subcycle. All of that can be studied in that section of Esoteric Psychology 1, with some degree of meticulousness so we can be straight about it, but I'm not going to go there right now. The stream of energy coming into our planetary life from the constellation Pisces has for 2,000 years conditioned the human experience and is peculiarly fitted to blend and complement this six-ray energy and to produce exactly the situation which is today governing world affairs. So it seems like the sixth ray lord and the lord of Pisces have together been successful as regards producing humanity's progress on our planet. Now, of course, these great lords exist in their own, the sixth ray lord exists in its own variety on the other planets, and Pisces will also affect those other planets when it comes time for the cycle, such as we are having on Earth, to occur on those other planets, which is not necessarily at the same time or the same moment. We are having, according to the orientation of our planet, the precessional age of Pisces, but that's not true of other planets. They are having other precessional ages simultaneously with ours, and thus will draw upon the power of certain constellations at different times than we here on Earth draw upon those constellational energies. So two factors have enhanced this effectiveness, you know, we might say. This effectiveness. The sixth ray of idealism, which is strong at this time, and Pisces together, they go together. The second and sixth rays usually are distributed through Pisces, but the occurrence of this accompanying sixth ray in the precessional age of Pisces comes from a different source. You could have an accompanying seventh ray or fifth ray or fourth ray along with a precessional age of Pisces. So the two things are unrelated. Pisces may have lots of sixth ray that it transmits, but the accompanying ray during the precessional age of Pisces is occurring according to its own cycle, and it just happens to be a sixth ray cycle. It's time for the sixth ray to appear with precessional Pisces, and of course that sixth ray is greatly accentuated because Pisces has a natural relation to the sixth ray, and the sixth ray works through it. Okay, I hope that was somewhat clear. The united activity of these two great streams of cosmic energy playing upon and through the third planetary center. See, we have six and three, and two threes are six. There's a numerical resonance there, has created the unique condition in which the race of man can stand before the planetary initiator of the Christ, who is Neptune, six ray, right? You know, let's look at all of these correspondences. The Christ is symbolically and in energy terms Neptune, and under the focus stimulation of the hierarchy pass through the appropriate initiation. In the case of the Christ, either the first or second, and there still is lots of six-ray aspiration involving the first initiation and control, right control of the six-ray for the second initiation. So, in other words, let's just say that Pisces and the six-ray have done well for humanity. Pisces and the six-ray have done well for human progress. Okay. So, you know, the preparation for this age of objectified initiation occurred under the sixth ray. The prep for this age of objectified initiation has all been prepared under the sixth ray, although it will now occur under the seventh ray. Okay. It should here be remembered that the masses of men can and will take the first initiation. How many? How many? Well, you know, some millions. It doesn't necessarily mean all the masses, because he indicates that elsewhere. But a very large group of aspirants, far larger than realized, will pass through the experience of the second initiation, that of the purifying baptism. So this is one of those passages that gives us an idea of the vast numbers. Okay. This passage tells us of the great numbers who will pass through these initiations. So there is a certain proportion from the masses of men who can and will take the first initiation. They are emerging from the sign Cancer, emerging from the sign Cancer of of mass consciousness into Leo, which in many ways rules the first initiation. And so they are the group which is changing their focus into the fifth kingdom of nature, so in many ways. But also there are those who for some time have taken that initiation, or at least it lies in their past, and they will be, well, specific numbers are not given, but they will pass through the experience of the second initiation, that of the purifying baptism. You can already see certain people passing through that right now. Certain ones are passing through right now. And they are doing their inner and psychological work to clear and purify themselves. Okay. So, how many will it be? You know, how many thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands for the second initiation? Somewhere in the books there are greater, closer approximations of how many will take that. But we have learned that millions will take the first initiation. Millions. Okay. Now that does not necessarily mean all at once, but as the process continues and the Christ reappears and he offers that initiation publicly, outwardly, the accumulation of those who take the birth of the Christ consciousness in the heart will be millions. So these people, you just mentioned them concerning the second initiation, who express, this is important. This is the distinction. And it's a very clear one between those who will take the first initiation and those who will take the second. These are the people who express the essential qualities of ideological recognition. They recognize the higher possibilities and aspire towards them. Devoted adherence to the truth as sensed. It may not be the same truth or system of truth, but there is devoted adherence. Profound reaction to the physical disciplines imposed since they participated in the first initiation many lives earlier, and a growing responsiveness to the aspirational aspect of the astral body. This looks like those who will take the second initiation. Elsewhere, there's an important differentiation between those who take the first and the second, and basically it's the mental approach that is added when you take the second degree. So anyway, the purifying baptism is here. They recognize the high ideals. They adhere to the truth, hopefully not so fanatically that they destroy their own approach. Profound reaction to the physical disciplines imposed since they participated in the first initiation many lives earlier, and a growing responsiveness to the aspirational aspect of the astral body. There are other aspects, but we learn that eventually aspiration will be one of the remnants when the astral body is cleared. This aspiration is occupied with reaching out towards contact with an expression of the mental principle. So this is interesting. So this is aspiration towards that which the lower mind can confer. This particular group in the human family are the Kama, monastic initiates, just as those taking the first initiation are the physico-etheric initiates. This is an important differentiation. It's not the one I was looking for before, but we'll come to that if it is in this book, whatever book it's in, where basically he tells us, you know, if you want to beautify your life, if you are interested in the esoteric or spiritual teaching, if you're purifying your life, then you are a candidate for the first initiation. And if you add to that the intention for spiritual intelligence and illumination of the mind, you may qualify to take the second degree. Okay, but we'll come to that when we come to it. Okay. Right. So, are we Kama monastic initiates, probationary initiates, of course, or are we physico-etheric initiates, which will be the largest proportion, or are we going on ahead, monastic initiates? And we might say, monastic intuitive initiates at the third degree, although manas outweighs in prominence the intuitive component, and the intuitive initiates of the fourth degree, with the beginning of real monadic influence. Okay, so I think, you know, we can stop here with this particular program. So this will be the end of Raise That Initiation Webinar Commentary, number 71. The day on which we're doing this is the 18th of February, and pages 576. I remember that time, but where are we now? Page 576 to 579. Okay. Okay. 579. And now this will be also the beginning of Ray's Initiation Webinar Commentary, number 72. I don't know what day, maybe today, I'm not sure. And 579 to however far we may manage to proceed. Well, I wonder if we appreciate as fully as we might the depth and the scope of what we're being given, and how very different it is, how much more advanced it is than what is usually fed to humanity as truth, even philosophical truth, which is wandering in the veil of illusion without having the advantage of a master mind to clarify the realities upon which philosophy should focus. So just those moments of appreciation will lead to a rededication of our aspiration and our mind and our will to the process of learning and assimilating what is truly invaluable, you know, has no value expressed in worldly terms, but is amazingly important. So we will talk about the ideological tendencies of mankind when we next take up this subject. So just remember the Kama monastic initiates and the physico-etheric initiates. These are the vast majority, and they are initiates of the threshold. They are probationary initiates, we might say. Okay, friends, thank you for your attendance and for thinking along with me. And we will proceed. See you soon. Bye-bye.